Serving Wisconsin's beautiful Northwoods, 98Q Country is 98.3 FM WCQM Park Falls, a civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. 5 weekends of campaigning until Election Day, and across the country, voters are weighing their concerns. For Sandra Jury in San Francisco, the future of the Middle East is a major issue.
I think Kamala and Tim Walz would do a better job of that. I think Trump is extremely selfish and can't see beyond his own ego.
In Vero Beach, Florida, Christine Lucas says,
I'm hoping Trump wins because of the economy. Yeah. That's my whole reason for voting is the economy.
Today, Trump returns to Butler, Pennsylvania for a rally on the same site where he was injured in an assassination attempt in July. Vice President Kamala Harris will be in North Carolina viewing the damage left by Helene. Storm now responsible for at least 220,000 deaths as power restoration efforts continue in the hardest hit areas. Tensions remain high in the Middle East, and Israel used an airstrike to cut off a main highway that links Lebanon with Syria. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden plans to return to Wisconsin Tuesday. More from Terry Bell.
The White House says the president will talk about the billions of dollars his administration has put into replacing lead pipes thanks to the bipartisan infrastructure law. Lead exposure is a long-standing problem in Milwaukee, which is replacing lead pipes to the tune of $800 million. Mayor Cavalier Johnson has said he wants to replace all of Milwaukee's lead pipes in 20 years. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Wisconsin wildlife officials are asking hunters to share deer tissue samples from the Oneida County town of Stella. The Department of Natural Resources plans to test these samples for PFAS. A local paper mill is linked to extremely high levels of PFAS in Stella. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
The Badgers look to bounce back. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. The Wisconsin football team is looking to find its winning ways once again as they battle Purdue today. Badgers head coach Luke Fickell said the quarterback spot will be key.
We can all pinpoint, he'll be the first one probably to tell you, the first series he went in there against Alabama was not, you know, what he wanted. But I'd be honest with you, he's continuing to grow. He's going to continue to grow. He's going to give us the opportunity, to be able to move the ball around. He's going to give us the opportunity to play at the pace we want to play at. He's going to give us the opportunity to get into the things we want to get into.
Today's game kicks off at 11 a.m. You can listen to it on WRJN, WRCE, WFHR, and WLAK on the Civic Media Network. Meanwhile, the Green Bay Packers will try to bounce back this week as they take on the L.A. Rams tomorrow. Kickoff is after 3 p.m. The Milwaukee Bucks wrapped up training camp yesterday. They'll take on the Detroit Pistons to open up the preseason tomorrow with a tip time of 7 p.m. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, a little bit breezy, slight chance of a thunderstorm, and a high near 70 degrees. For tonight, showers and storms are likely. We'll see breezy conditions with a low of 44. Sunday, partly sunny, breezy, highs of 55, and Monday, sunny and 62.
Right now, it's 37.
Broadcasting on the Sporting Journal Radio Network, wherever you get your podcasts, or watch on YouTube.
Well, we're here at the 2024 Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic.
Presented by Onyx. Know where you stand with Onyx.
And our guest now is Jeremy Smith.
I fish, I hunt, and always will.
It's just a lookout for your everyday hunter, angler, and trapper that's out there.
A Fish Hunt Forever production. This is Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson along with Dan Amundson. What's up, Dan?
Very distracted. We're in Regina, Saskatchewan, and there today, for some reason, snow geese are just, there's a flock right there. The third flock in like the last 15 minutes. So we're going to hurry up, get a podcast done, and then try to shoot birds, I guess.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about what we've done so far up here in Saskatchewan. And Regina's a great place to come through, either on your way through or to maybe hunt around here. Obviously, the birds are pushing around here. There's a lot of Canada geese and ducks in the area. And we got to do some really cool things Sorry. While we're here, Dan.
Yeah.
We're going to tell you what you can do if you're coming through during the fall, during a hunting season, or maybe if you're up here fishing or just traveling, looking for places to go with the family. We got some travel tips for you. And I have another tip for you, Dan. It's kind of windy here in the prairie. Don't set your laptop on a tonneau cover on a windy day, because literally 30 seconds ago, I just broke my laptop. So that's pretty neat.
Learned that one. Pretty excited about that. Will be a good thing about Regina is there's a lot of things around here, so maybe we can go to the Best Buy and...
The Best Buy.
Yeah.
The Best Buy.
Maybe the Geek Squad's there.
Or we'll go to Best Buy, yeah.
Maybe the Geek Squad's there and can fix it.
So. Oh, man. This is a travel edition of Sporting Journal Radio, but we're going to talk about some things back home, too. They put out some results from the elk hunt in Minnesota this year. There was also a DNR survey for waterfowl hunters on how waterfowl hunters felt about the teal season in Minnesota this year, because it was a three-year experimental season, and they're trying to decide if they want to continue it or not. And they're going through the respondents right now. We'll tell you what we read. We were reading some outdoor news articles while we were up here. So we'll tell you what we read from those results coming up. Also, Jason Seelock, he was with Wired to Fish for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. We met him down in Kentucky Lake while we were down there. And he's going to join us to talk about Kentucky Lake, but also talk about just fishing in general.
Yeah. We interviewed him at Kentucky Lake. He's not here in Regina with
Correct.
Us. So we're going to go back down to Kentucky Lake. And it's starting to rain, so that's cool.
Yeah, I did get the weather warning about the rain.
Let's see what other equipment we can wreck today.
This is awesome. All right, and Joe Henry will have a Lake of the Woods fishing report for us here in a little bit. But first, Dan, who are the sponsors this week on the show?
The official truck sponsor of Fish Hunt Forever is Invergrove Toyota. When looking for your new rig, head to Invergrove Toyota. Lake of the Woods Tourism. Lake of the Woods is the walleye capital of the world. Plan a trip for this fall or winter at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. On X Hunt, see private land boundaries, recent imagery, offline maps, and Minnesota specific hunt layers. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. Tazen Lake Lodge, catch world record lake trout and giant pike at Saskatchewan's Tazen Lake. Learn more at tazenlake.com. Devil's Lake, North Dakota, catch it all at Devil's Lake. Prairie Sportsman, new season wrapped up this spring, but we are filming new episodes right now, and you can watch old episodes anytime at the Prairie Sportsman YouTube channel. Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort, fish Devil's Lake this fall or winter. Learn more at haybaleheights.com. And Guardian Eagle Resort, plan a trip for next summer. Go fish the Ontario waters of Guardian Eagle Resort. You can fly directly to the lodge from the Twin Cities. Learn more at guardianeagle.com.
Don't forget, you can watch this show and win a t-shirt. Make duck season late again. Go to sportingjournalradio.com and click on the link on the right side of the page, and then put your email address in, and then watch the link right there in the contest for your chance to win a shirt. Dan, one of the more fun things we've done in Minnesota is film an elk hunt for Prairie Sportsman.
Yeah, that was, somebody just sent me a Snapchat. They were watching it and they did a rerun on PBS, and Scott Moon, of course, was gracious enough to let us tag along on that cool hunt. And getting to hear elk bugle in Minnesota, that's a sound everyone should hear. You know, we down in Kentucky, there was a preserve in Land Between the Lakes that had some bison and some elk, and Brady Loudon from Bemidji, he went over there to check it out, and he was like, dude, the sound is just so cool. I got so close to him. I'm like, yeah, you need to go. You're not too far away from elk in Minnesota. You should go drive over there and take a look. And it's something that a lot of people don't know about, and it's kind of something I don't want a lot of people to know about, because I want to draw a tag to go hunt.
There were about 4,000 tags issued this year from the Minnesota DNR. 10 elk were, or 10 tags were issued out of 4,000 applicants. Yep. 4,000 applicants, 10 tags issued, and there were 8 bulls, it sounds like, from state hunters. And then the Red Lake Tribe had 30 tags with a quota of 10 elk, and it sounds like they also shot 8. Yep. 8 so far, they can still...
They have a longer season.
They have a longer season, so they could still shoot those other 2. So congratulations. Sounds like some real nice bull elk shot, and we've got some big, beautiful animals up there in northwest Minnesota. All right, if you want to do some fishing, some world-class walleye fishing, check out Devil's Lake, North Dakota. You can catch it all in Devil's Lake. Right now, people are up there shooting ducks, too, and little cast and blast action.
Pheasant season opens soon.
Catch it all at Devil's Lake. Visit devilslakend.com to learn more information. Dan, we spent some time chasing teal during the early teal season. I'm not generally a big fan. I've had some people say, well, you pushed hard for that early teal season, and I've explained this many times on the show. I did push hard for it, but it was because I wanted us then to push back the regular season opener so we didn't open so early, and that didn't happen. We opened at this year, September 21st. We had our teal season the 1st through the 5th, and while we were out there hunting, we heard shooters shooting a half hour early. Yep. It's a little confusing, although by the third or fourth year now, you should have been able to figure it out. But so there were guys shooting early, and there were a lot of mistake ducks shot. And with the DNR survey, it sounds like it was 17% of respondents said that they heard shooting early, and about 13% of respondents said they heard about mistake ducks.
Yeah, so that's, I'm not surprised about that. I'm honestly kind of surprised the number's not higher, and maybe some people were like, ooh, if I put down some people were shooting early, maybe I'm going to get in trouble or something. So maybe, you know, they've got their confidence margins in these surveys and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see if we get it in 2025.
Yeah, it's not a done deal. It sounded like people were half and half, pretty much evenly split on whether or not the Minnesota DNR should continue an early teal season. If you think we should continue it, comment below. If you're watching this on YouTube, comment below and let us know your thoughts on an early teal season in Minnesota. Or if you want to see, I mean, why not? Want to see a later duck season? Go for it. I did see some people in a forum on Facebook complaining about the split once again.
Yeah.
Every year.
What? One person complained about it.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people chimed in and said, hey, we want it longer. We want, you know, there's a lot of people this year that have been talking about wanting to hunt late season, and they're upset about it. So we need to speak up, because we're not the only ones. So speak up, fill out those surveys when they show up, and send emails, send messages. Go pound on the door in St. Paul. Do what you got to do.
Be vocal. And when you get a survey, fill it out. That's how the DNR makes their, you know, they take that into account.
There's more snow geese.
Make their decisions. Oh, man. I'm so excited about this. You know, we're up in Canada right now. And if you want to go on a Canadian fishing trip, check out Guardian Eagle Resort in Ontario. They have 75,000 acres of private water, just one walleye after another. You can even feed walleyes off the dock. And you can land right at their lodge as well, too. You can fly direct from Minneapolis and land right on their concrete runway, right at their resort. Visit guardianeagle.com for more information and plan your trip for 2025 up there. Now, Dan and I are on the road, as you can see if you're watching this. If you're listening to it on the radio network or on Spotify or wherever you download podcasts, you might hear a little wind noise, maybe some traffic. We're outside right now. Actually, the camera's getting rained on as we speak because we're on a road trip. Yeah. We're on a waterfowl road trip. And some of the things that we try to do when we go on these trips is not just, you know, show you the hunting or show you the fishing. We try to show you how you can experience and some of the other adventures that you can have along the way. And Dan, here in Regina, there's a lot of cool things to do, including the RCMP Heritage Museum.
Royal Canadian Mounted Police Heritage Museum.
Or Heritage Center.
Center, yeah. It's a museum.
Yeah.
It's, well, it goes through the history of the RCMP, which is really cool. You know, you just think of the Mounties as a guy on a horse in a red jacket, and there's a lot more to it than that. A, the terrain that they have covered is wild. You know, northern Canada is unbelievable. You know, they're ranging from the eastern coast to Whitehorse, the Yukon, the Northwest Territories, the Arctic. So it's pretty cool. And some of them have served in wars. You know, when the British forces needed backup, they said, hey, can we get some RCMP?
Well, a lot of those were actually members of the British forces. So when they came over from England and started the RCMP over here, a lot of them were people that fought in the military over in England and started the RCMP, I think, in 1873, and then continued westward across Canada. And then, yeah, when World War One, I think, happened.
I think it was both wars.
Some of the guys went back over to fight for England, basically, in those wars. So some of the history, and then, you know, you learn about when they got into kind of our neck of the woods, Minnesota, the Dakotas, Ontario, Manitoba, there was some crossover from some of the people, some of the native, the indigenous people and things like that. And the RCMP was, you know, involved in some of those relations. And so some of our history from back home in Minnesota and North Dakota, some of that spilled over into the RCMP history as well that we learned about while we were there.
Yep.
So it was neat. There's a lake, Wascana.
We don't know how to pronounce it, but it's what Regina was before it was named Regina.
They have a migratory bird sanctuary there. So we stopped there, brought out the new Ride-On spotting scope that I got at the conference last week in Kentucky Lake. And there was widgeon, there was mallards, there's Canada. It's just kind of neat to see waterfowl like that.
It always is. It's like, it reminded me of the gopher sanctuary in Hutchinson.
Yeah, for sure.
Pretty cool.
And then we went from there to, last time we went to the casino.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Well, what good hunting or fishing trip doesn't involve one trip to the casino?
Right.
I'm not a big casino guy, but we know plenty of hunting and fishing groups that they plan their trip around the vicinity of the casino.
Well, and what was neat about this one is they have a concert hall, so like Hoobastank was coming. Emerson Drive was here, I think, tonight. There was
Lund.
Yeah, Corb Lund, there's some comics. Yeah. And but then the building is an old train depot from 100 years ago. So you walk in and it's this huge old building that they've completely renovated and remodeled on the inside. There's ghost stories. There's a lot of history on the walls while you're in there gaming. My first two spins, I doubled my money, which never happens, which was kind of nice. And then when we went, Nate, we ate in an old rail car from 1920 that they remodeled and made it part of the restaurant.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Probably the coolest casino I've been in, just because it didn't, you know, didn't feel like you're walking into just a dark old building that smelled like cigarette smoke.
Right.
Some history and kind of cool marble walls, and the stairs down to the bathroom was where you used to get on the train, underground passage.
They had like the train, all the departure times and all that stuff still on the wall.
Yep. So yeah, I knew when I could get on the train to go to Winnipeg and get home.
It's pretty, I mean, 100 years ago. So think about 1920, people were getting on trains there and riding them across Canada. And now you can go there and
play the buffalo.
Play the buffaloes or the pigs or whatever you're into. So, Regina, I mean, we stop here a lot of times. Like when we go up to Tazan Lake Lodge, we drive up to Fort McMurray in Alberta. This is a lot of times, you know, one of our stopping points to grab a night, usually in this hotel, the Comfort Inn, because it's dog friendly. We can park right outside our hotel room here. They got sliding windows, so we can go in and out right in our room here, which is kind of nice. And then there's there's a Tim Hortons there, McDonald's, there's a Chinese buffet.
There's all sorts of restaurants.
And a bar and grill, literally right next to the parking lot here. So it's a real nice location. And then there's, you know, we've never really gone around and done all these things around town. So there's a lot of cool things to do. And they have a direct flight from Minneapolis to Regina now. So if you're going to come up here on a hunting trip and you didn't want to drive, you can actually fly direct. I think it's WestJet.
Yep.
Flies direct from Minneapolis to Regina. You can rent a car, see some of the stuff in the city. Maybe your hunting trip doesn't start till tomorrow. You can go to the casino, have a little bit of fun, have a bite to eat before your trip starts.
Yep. There'll be a Rough Riders game happening next week. So stadium, we haven't been inside yet, but we drove by it. It looks pretty neat, actually, for a Saskatchewan football stadium. So we're going to go check that out next weekend and watch a little bit of football.
Yeah. It's going to be a good time. And we're going to do some waterfowl hunting. It was funny, like when we came across the border and we were talking to the border agent, they're like, well, are you going to be hunting the whole time? We're like, well, we're, Dan's like, we're going to the Rough Riders game. I'm like, heck yeah. Like, this is a fun trip. I mean, you want to always max. I know how waterfowl hunters can be. You want to hunt all the time. You want to maximize your time. But hunting can be so good up here that your success rate can be very high. And all of a sudden, you got a lot of birds to bring back. Take an extra day to go out and do some of these other things.
Yeah, you can only have so many birds in your possession.
Yeah. See some of the sites, do some touring, bring the family, bring your wife up. There's a lot of things for them to do up here. Bring the kids. There's a Cabela's, so if you forget something at home, you can run into Cabela's and pick up more shells or gloves, or, you know, if the weather turns and you forgot your jacket at home or whatever, you can do that and then go to a Riders game.
Yeah.
I'm jacked about the Riders game.
It should be fun, but we got to go hunt some birds first. Yeah. Getting antsy now that the white ones are here.
So. I cannot wait. All right. Well, we've got Joe Henry coming up next. We're going to go back to Minnesota, get a Lake of the Woods fishing report. And then Jason Seelock, we met him at Kentucky Lake. Great guy. He's going to talk about the state of fishing. He's going to talk about how Kentucky Lake rebounded, and talk about his time at Wired to Fish as well. He was there for a long time. And if you're looking for a fishing trip to Saskatchewan, maybe stop here in Regina on your way to Tazan Lake Lodge. It's world record lake trout, trophy northern pike fishing, pike over 50 inches. TazanLake.com, scenic northwest Saskatchewan. It doesn't look anything like it does around Regina here. It's this is the prairie up there. It is rugged, big high hills and trees and big, big fish. Very little fishing pressure. Find out more at TazanLake.com.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
This is Sporting Journal Radio, presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
All right, Joe Henry joins us now from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Looks like we're both in hotel rooms.
We are on the road right now. We're on a waterfowl trip. What are you doing?
I'm down in La Crescent, Minnesota, across the river from La Crosse, Wisconsin, for some state tourism meetings.
All right. Well, that's cool. Joe, how is fishing up at Lake of the Woods right now?
Things are awesome. It's really not that different from when I reported last week. We have a pile of fish. Different schools of fish are spread out across the South Shore. So to give you an example, for people fishing out of the Rainy River resorts, sliding right out through the lighthouse gap where the Rainy River, meets the lake, and just going out in about 25 to 31 feet of water as a rule, and just watching your electronics, looking for some activity in your graph and finding some activity, some life, and anchoring up. And you normally anchor up for about 30 minutes and over the side of the anchor up, put over the or spot lock nowadays, over the side of the boat, drop a jig, usually a gold or glow white or glow red or chartreuse or orange, pink, maybe a combo of those colors because of the stained water. But put a frozen emerald shiner, or there's even live emerald shiners now because there are some emerald shiners running in the Rainy River they're catching. And drop that over the side and just go fishing. And give it 30 minutes, and usually those fish will find you. If you're not doing real well, or you're catching small fish and don't think you're on the quality fish, reset your spot. But it's pretty fun fishing, pretty good fishing. And there's schools like that spread out all the way down to, Morris Point, down to Zippel Bay, down to Long Point. I mean, there's fish all through there. In addition, there's fish in the Rainy River now. I talked to somebody. We had a real windy day this week, and one of the charter boats fished in the river, which it's a nice option to have, right? And they went about 8 miles upstream, and I heard that they're all by themselves, and the boat limited out. So there's fish to be had in the river, too. I would say that there's still more fish out in the lake. I mean, that's going to be your first choice. But you know what? People are reporting nice catches of walleyes in the Rainy River. So some of those walleyes are coming out of that lake already, chasing those shiners upstream.
Obviously, it changes every year, but historically, when you talk about the fall run of the shiners followed by the walleyes, it's generally starting to be about this time of year, isn't it?
Actually, earlier. I would say it actually starts now. If you had to pin me down, I'd say the second week of September, we start seeing shiners running up that river. And I think this year is probably even earlier. Now, was it a big run? No, but there was definitely shiners running up that river, and that activity with minnows like that is going to pull some fish in too. There's also a nice population of they call them resident walleyes in the Rainy River. Not every walleye goes to the lake, and I'll say this, but if the Rainy River was our only source of body of water, that would be a great fishing destination all by itself. And I should mention too that fishing up in the Northwest Angle now is just awesome. I mean, yeah, they're catching their walleyes and saugers, mainly walleyes, in many spots. They're catching them over deep mud. They're catching them in neck down areas where there's some current. Whenever you have a constriction where there's islands coming together, you get some current going through there because that water on Lake of the Woods flows straight north to the angle, and then it turns northwest and goes another 40 miles all the way up to Kenora where it goes out the dam there. And then ends up actually in the Winnipeg River and Lake Winnipeg and then up to Hudson Bay up in Churchill. But the point is, there is moving water in Lake of the Woods, so when you can get those neck down areas, this time of year, that area up just to the straight east of Garden Island called Northwest Point, it's kind of an area where there's a lot of current going through because it's a little bit deeper. That's always a nice spot to anchor up off of there. This time of year, Knight and Bridges Islands are some nice spots because those fish are moving through there pretty good, it seems. And of course, just fishing structure around those islands, Brent. The underwater points, some of the sunken islands. There's plenty of fish to be had. I should say too, up in the angle, it's a multi-species fest. I mean, yeah, they're catching their big crappies this time of year. They're getting jumbo perch, smallmouth bass, pike, and of course the musky anglers are pretty active right now because as this water gets cold, those muskies really put on the old feed bag.
It was tough when we were up there last year, Joe, and we were layout boat hunting with Forrest Hewson and Andy Reeves, and it was unreal. It's one of the craziest waterfall hunts we've ever been a part of, but it was so hard to be up there. And Forrest kept saying, "You want to go fish for muskies now?" We're up here to hunt. It's just painful. They wanted us to fish, and we just didn't have time to do it. So it was so hard to be up there in an area like that and not fish, because we did it the year before when we filmed the Prairie Sportsman episode with them, and we took one afternoon and just went out and fished off a point and caught our walleyes for a meal. We caught a muskie while we were jigging for walleyes. We got smallmouth, we got perch. I don't know, 4 or 5, 6 different species, I think, while we were sitting there. So
that was a cool day of fishing. You know, it's funny, Brett, because every once in a while I'll have some media come to do grouse hunting. We've just right now grouse hunting's excellent down in you know, south end of the lake, Beltrami Island State Forest and such. But I always suggest to take a at least a half a day, maybe a full day, and just go and fish it. And they're always resistant because they're there to hunt. I get it, but overwhelmingly, any hunters that come and take a half a day to fish in the fall, when they if they come back a second time like the next year, they always say, you know, let's just do a whole day of fishing, because fishing is usually so good this time of year, and they enjoy it so much. What a nice break to go and catch, you know, however many guys or gals they have, to catch a few limited walleyes and bring those home with you.
Yeah, you have rough grouse opportunities, obviously waterfowl opportunities, and the waterfowl opportunities, I mean, not just up at the angle, but down around the Rainy River and 4 Mile Bay. I mean, there's a lot of, you got a duck boat, there's a lot of opportunities you can find some water to yourself, and usually a fair amount of ducks that are rolling through there too.
Well, we got 4 Mile Bay, which is a huge bay. It's like an inland lake, but there's lots of patches of reeds around the shorelines, and you know, you can just pretty much go anywhere there and set up and do get some action. You know, Zippel Bay, you know, the South Shore Lake of the Woods can have some good spots, and of course, even on the Rainy River, I know people that hunt the Rainy River. You know, we don't talk about goose hunting very much, but we have some of the best goose hunting probably in North America this time of year. The challenge is, you know, a lot of the goose hunting is done in fields, and those fields are private land. The agricultural fields are, and for the most part, they're pretty well locked up with friends and family. Boy, I'll tell you, you know, if you ever get a chance to get out in one of those fields, and those fish, you know, those geese, notoriously, they'll go back to the lake eventually. It's a little bit tougher to pattern them on the lake than it is, as you know, in a field.
All right, lots of outdoor opportunities up at Lake of the Woods right now, cast and blast opportunities. It's one of those great times of year with all, you know, all that state ground for grouse hunting around the area, and of course, this winter, ice fishing and snowmobiling opportunities up there. So you go there for the fish.
I mean, now is a very, very good time to get reservations if you want to come ice fishing. You still got some dates that you can get. But, you know, as time goes on here and it starts getting colder, more and more people will make their bookings. They get in now and get the dates you want.
All right, Joe. Well, if people want to get some of those dates locked in or learn about fall opportunities up there, what should they do?
Hey, check out our website, and that is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Hunting season will be here before you know it, and it's time to get ready for your next adventure with the OnX Hunt app. Whether you're traveling in search of roosters, elk, waterfowl, or looking to score on a whitetail close to home, OnX Hunt can help you be more successful this season. Route, plan, and navigate with private and public land boundaries, recent imagery, offline maps, and Minnesota-specific hunt layers. Download the Hunt app on the App Store or Google Play and join the millions of hunters that trust OnX Hunt.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Hi, this is Jody with the Kurtz Island Sport Shop Fishing Report. It's been a very warm September. Thought with forecast of cooler mornings and temps to come that things would get back to a normal fall. Well, with temps cracking into the 80s in the afternoons, not much changed. Surface temps dropping overnight to lows in upper 60s, climbing back to low 70s by afternoon. As we turn the calendar page, looks like October may finally bring some fall-like temps. Muskies are good to fare. Early mornings best up tight on inside weed edges and shallow weeds. With bright sun and mostly flat water, better move out to deeper water weeds as things brighten up. Topwater and bucktails that you can ride up over weeds. Gliders and twitch baits moving fish also. Best fish of the week, a 48-inch first fish muskie caught with guide Jake Smith. Smallmouth bass, good to fare. Drop shotting over gravel humps in 18 to 28 feet, providing some action. Lots of searching for active fish, best in late mornings. Crappie are good to fare. Another species, nearly all of them actually, that seems to be waiting for a drop in water temps to kick in. Some decent catches of fish suspending 2 to 4 feet off bottom, outside coontail edges, and over drowned wood in 12 to 14 feet of water. We are finally seeing some patches of color in the area. They seem to pop up overnight and will probably fill in quickly due to the late start. Can't recall such a warm, sunny, and many days windless September. Thought it was going to change this past week, but it didn't. Yet now, as we start October, forecast of lows in upper 30s to low 40s and highs in the upper 50s to low 60s, we will finally get this fall fishing bite going. This has been Jody with your Kurtz Island Sports Shop Fishing Report. Good luck out there.
Get hooked on adventure at Kurtz Island Sports Shop. Reel in the big ones with their primo fishing gear. From rods that lure envy to bait that fish can't resist. Need a fish whisperer? Kurtz Pros offer guide services to turn your fishing tales into legends. Swing by 824 Highway 51 North in Minocqua and gear up for epic fishing fun. Kurtz Island Sports Shop, where fishing dreams and big laughs are always in stock.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters. Northwoods
weather. With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, a little bit breezy, slight chance of a thunderstorm, and a high near 70 degrees. For tonight, showers and storms are likely. We'll see breezy conditions with a low of 44. Sunday, partly sunny, breezy, highs of 55. And Monday, sunny and 62.
Right now, 38 degrees. 98 Q Country.
This is Sporting Journal Radio, presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
All right, this is Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in on the network, by demand, sportingjournalradio.com, or watching this on YouTube. As you can tell, we're on the road once again. Behind me here is the famous Kentucky Lake. It's the AGLO Annual Conference 2024. We're here at Kentucky Lake, and we're learning about how this fishery has evolved, even just in recent years, how it's changed in recent years. We're also learning about the bass fishing here. We did a little bit of time on the water, and of course, networking with a bunch of other professionals, including Jason Seelock. Jason, how you doing?
I'm good. Glad to have y'all.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show, first of all. Thanks for coming and being a part of the conference. We're going to be talking specifically about kind of what's happened here the last couple of years, from the Asian carp to some, I guess there's a few years of bad spawns out there and everything else. But you were with Wired to Fish. You're not with Wired to Fish any longer. What are you doing?
So I ran Wired to Fish for about 15 years. Left this spring to kind of pursue my own deal. So I'm helping companies with their own content marketing. So working with brands directly to help make content related to their products, help them rank for the categories that they make products for, helping them with media campaigns and shooting content and video and photos and writing articles for them. So similar to what I was doing and somewhat the same capacity, just on different platforms. So no, it's been really good. I work with a bunch of great people, and it's been nice because I've been able to be selective and pick and choose who I want to work with and the companies that I already love and the stuff I already use. And so that part's been really nice. So, I know it's going good.
I'll tell you what, that's so much fun. And in this day and age, particularly with the internet and all the digital options and the digital landscape out there, it's created opportunities for do this. I'm sure Wired to Fish was great. I mean, that company, just where that company has gone, where it started and where it went, I mean, that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was a fun journey. The Glorvigans are great people. They gave us a really good opportunity and kind of gave us carte blanche to do it how we wanted to do. And it was kind of a trial and error, brute force, you know, try a bunch of things that didn't work initially, and then we started to figure it out as we went. And we were fortunate to do it during a time when the social media platforms were playing nice and letting us grow organically, and they really favored good content in certain niches, and fishing was one of those. So most of our growth came organically. We just focused on churning out good content that helped anglers and helped the industry, and it's worked out good. So no, it's a great company. It has great people, and it's been a very good thing for the fishing industry, in my opinion. So, and I think we've helped a lot of anglers. I know here locally we've taught a generation of people how to ledge fish, and now we're doing the same thing kind of with some of the new technologies like forward facing sonar. So, and I'm still continuing to write for them. I write a lot of op-eds for them. Still help with buyer's guides and things like that. But yeah, so I still love Wired to Fish. They'll have a big piece of my heart because I helped build it. So
yeah.
But it was just, you know, this stage of my career, I wanted to go do it on my own for a little while and just see. So no, it was good. I loved my time there. I loved the people I worked with.
There's something about being your own boss, man. I do the same thing. I love it. But when you look back on 15 years, what is something that you're most proud of with your time there, you think?
I think probably the relationships we built, you know, with companies in the fishing industry, but more importantly with kind of the angling community. So we have so many diehard loyal people, and it's crazy. Like I tell people, like I'm kind of hidden in Marshall County. A lot of people don't know who I am here, but it's like you go anywhere out there, like I run into more people in the airport that just want to come up and talk to you, like random places like that, right? Like that part's always like been the coolest for me, to have some person you've never met just walk up to you on the street in another state, be like, oh my gosh, are you the guy from Wired to Fish? Like I watch all your videos. Like that to me is the coolest thing that we've done. Like
now with forward facing sonar and the controversy, if you want to call it that, that it's causing, Have you seen anything that's changed the industry? I mean, there hasn't been anything maybe ever since maybe the green box or something that's changed the industry this much, is there?
Yeah, it's a polarizing deal. I think it's affected people more than it's really affected the fishing or the fish. Because the young generation, they've grown up on it. So they've come up learning, you know, bass behavior with what they've actually been able to witness on a screen, where, you know, you and me came up fishing with a lot of theories, what we thought the fish were doing, because we didn't have any way to look at them under the surface. And so, I think there's, you know, there's been a little bit of a divide where some of the older anglers think, you know, the younger generation isn't learning any other thing about fishing because they just look at a screen all day. I'm kind of in the opposite camp. I consider myself the older generation, but I feel like, you know, the younger generation is learning at a faster rate, and they're actually learning with data that they can see for themselves. So, yeah, they're getting well-versed in fishing. And most of the young guys, like I'm connected with the Murray State guys, those guys spend 50 and 60 hours a week on the lake. And, you know, yes, they're using electronics, but they're spending a lot of time on the water. And that's, to me, what makes a really good angler. So they're getting immediate feedback with the technology, which is making them very competitive. So what's happening kind of in pro fishing, I wrote an article for Wired to Fish about a month ago talking about how the landscape of pro fishing was changing. What I really think is going on is that used to an angler had to kind of come up through the ranks and learn the lakes and spend several years on tour kind of figuring different bodies of water out. Now the technology is so good, they're able to do that at such a fast rate. They're competitive within a year or two of being on the circuit. So because they can get out there, spend the time on a body of water with the technology they have and learn it faster than I ever could, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Well, I mean, that's when the older anglers talk about having to learn the lake and learn the body of water and learn all that. I mean, and then they say this is video game fishing with live scope or forward facing sonar. I mean, you are using electronics a little bit differently, but essentially you are cramming all that knowledge into a shorter period of time. I mean, you're using the electronics, and sure, you're seeing how the fish is reacting to what you're doing in real time. But at the same time that you're doing that, you're learning about the behavior of that fish. Mm-hmm. Like I will, like on a windy day, if we're running the live scope and if we can stay on the fish, even better. But if we're swaying too much and I can't see how I'm working that fish, I, in my mind, I'm picturing how the last fish that I watched reacted. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did he like it if I jigged it faster? You're going over your cadence in your head, or
yep,
you know, you're trying to imagine what that fish did. It's allowing you to just learn how they're reacting versus trying to figure, just instead of trying to imagine how they're reacting.
Yeah, I tell everyone, I think what's happening now is the technology is building a better angler at a much faster rate. That's what's happening. Yeah. So they're getting immediate feedback on everything they do. We all are at this point. Like, so I think especially the young generation that's come up with it, like, they're learning so much faster than I learned at their age, right? So when they get to be my age, they're going to be so much better, so much further ahead than I am now. Like, that's just what I feel like. I'm not pro technology or anti technology. I am anti limiting innovation. So like, let's not limit our ability to learn new things by saying, well, let's not use this because, you know, that's the only way he knows how to fish, which I don't believe is true. I think these guys are spending more hours on the water than I did at their age. You know, they're putting the time in. I don't know why we would discount that because they're good with the technology.
Right.
I don't know. That's kind of my thing that sticks in my craw a little bit, is people want to label everybody now, well, you're a live scoper, so you're only good at this thing. Yeah. Well, it doesn't mean that guy doesn't know how to go flip. It doesn't mean he doesn't know how to go throw a topwater. You know what I mean? Like, he can do the other things too. He spent a lot of time on the water. What he's doing now, and it's not a magic box. You don't just land on the fish because you have live scope. And if you do happen to get in an area where the fish are, you're going to see 10 fish that won't bite for every one that does. So, I mean, you're going to realize real quickly, like, we're not as good at catching fish as we think we are. So, yeah, it's more humbling to me than it is like a magic pill to just catch fish.
Yeah. I thought
I thought it was hilarious. Dan and I were watching YouTube one night, and we were going through some old tournament videos, and you hear people talk about tournaments today, and like, I don't want to watch a guy just staring at a screen all day. Well, what was that, FLW 2011 or something like that? I don't remember what we were watching, but it was a guy sitting up front looking at his 2D, you know, or some sort of electronic, just staring at it, jigging off the bow of the boat. I mean, it was exactly like if LiveScope would have been around back then. And we've had some tournament changes when it comes to forward-facing sonar. We've seen some lakes in Mississippi that made headlines everywhere about changing some limits. Let's start in the tournament world. What do you think about the changes that have taken place this year when it comes to some of the bass tournaments out there, and what do you think the future is going to look like?
Yeah, I think what we have coming up in 2025 is a good thing, because we have three circuits that took three different kind of takes on it. So one said we're banning it outright. One said, this is on the bass side, MPFL is going to ban it. Bass said, hey, we're gonna limit it, so you can have one transducer, you can have so many inches of screen, you can't have breaks. So we're kind of putting everyone kind of on a level, more level field, because you had some guys this year that were running six live scope transducers. So that's getting to be a little nonsense to me.
I mean, it now sounds guys, awesome, but
yeah, well, it, right, but it's again, like, now every guy's got to spend 20 grand on live scope, you know. Yeah. So I don't think it should be an arms race to see who's, you know, who can has a better chance to win because he spent more money on electronics. I'm not for that, but yeah, I and then you got, you know, the BPT is going to do kind of a hybrid where certain days they're going to be allowed to use it and certain days they're not going to be allowed to use it. So,
all right, our guest is Jason Seelock here on Sporting Journal Radio. More with him when we come back.
If you want to catch a big walleye, go where the big walleyes are. Lake of the Woods is the walleye capital of the world, with a variety of resorts and lodging facilities offering full-service fishing. Lake of the Woods is also home to sturgeon, sauger, perch, trophy pike, muskie, smallmouth bass, burbot, and more. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods today. Go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
If you want a new truck without spending $60,000 to $80,000, we'll take a look at the Toyota Tacoma. Or look at David's in the driveway right now. Starting at just $36,195, Tacoma is the number one selling midsize truck in America, selling more than Chevy Colorado and Ford Ranger combined. It's better than ever for the 24 model year. And it now tows up to 6,500 pounds and will get you where you need to go. And we have a deal for you. We'll get you $250 off the lowest advertised price, plus an additional $500 off your trade-in. This is a great deal just for our listeners. You have to fill out the voucher, though, at InvergroveToyota.com/FHF. That's InvergroveToyota.com/FHF to claim your trade-in voucher today.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
I don't know about other states, but in Wisconsin, we help our neighbors and love our communities. But California mega millionaire Eric Hovde doesn't seem to get that. Maybe that's why he questioned whether children should be able to stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26. And whether people in nursing homes should be able to vote. Hovde called for raising the retirement age for hardworking Wisconsinites and making obese people pay more for health care. And a Hovde company even spent decades trying to demolish the building housing Madison's oldest family-owned bar, something they finally did this year, shuttering a treasured neighborhood institution for good. That is not how we do things in Wisconsin. And that is why we can't let California mega millionaire Eric Hovde represent us. Paid for by a Better Wisconsin Together Action. ABWT-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Get ready for Lena Palooza this Saturday, October 5th at Lena's Northern Pines Resort in Butternut, Wisconsin. Bring your ATV, UTV, classic car, motorcycle, or even bicycle to support the Catkins No Kill Animal Rescue Fundraiser. Register from 7:30 to 9 a.m. for a $40 wristband, which includes a lunch and pizza buffet. Enjoy breakfast, fall colors, and camaraderie while supporting a great cause. For details, visit Flambeau Riders or Lena's Northern Pines Facebook page.
Pluto TV is a place for movie fans like me.
And TV fans like me.
They've got something for everyone, and it's free.
I love free, and I love Jersey Shore.
For me, it's The Godfather.
SpongeBob SquarePants, I am Patrick. Patrick is me.
Oh, Forrest Gump, come on.
Criminal Minds, solving crime after bedtime.
Whatever you love to watch, Pluto TV makes it easy with thousands of free movies and shows.
Pluto TV, stream now, pay never.
This is Sporting Journal Radio, presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in on the network, watching this on YouTube, or maybe listening on Spotify. Jason Seelock is our guest.
So, going back to the arms race question, I mean, do you start looking at other, I mean, it's an arms race, whether you're talking about electronics or not. You're talking about boats, you're talking about motors, yeah. You're talking about all the latest and greatest in technology. And is it going to be a situation where it becomes like NASCAR, where everything is measured? It can't be, you know, we're limiting horsepower. Like, we watched the first Bassmaster, I think, 1971, I think something like that. And they're all in the exact same boat,
yeah,
with the exact same electronics. Like, right. Everyone's on a level playing field. And you can't do that these days with sponsors and brand deals and things like that. But there's probably some specifications you could try to keep the same across the board.
Yeah, I mean, you take like the All-American, so that's like the championship for what I call weekend tournament fishermen. So the BFLs, their championship, the All-American, that is what they did forever, was everybody got in the same exact boat with the same exact electronics and the same trolling motor and the same outboard. And and so it was like, you know, a completely level field. Will we get back to that point? No, I don't think it's going to go that far. Do I think we should restrict things? I don't know. I go back and forth with it. My big thing with forward-facing sonar is, so we get rid of that, but we're okay with advanced mapping, and we're okay, right, with side scan and down scan and 360 and all these other technologies we use, but this one is, well, it's because we're seeing it real time. Yeah, okay. Well, side scan was 5 seconds ago. 360 was 2 seconds ago. You know what I mean? Like, we're kind of splitting hairs here a little bit on the technology. So, yeah.
And if it's not catching the fish for you.
Yeah, that's my whole thing. Like, it's not a magic pill. Just because I see the fish there doesn't mean I'm going to catch that fish. So
what do you think about, just generally, not even just the Mississippi situation, but what do you think about limits overall in the United States?
Yeah, my hope with it all is that because we're learning so much more about fish and we're learning more about how people are catching them, maybe we're going to have better management of fisheries. So we're going to know, like, man, this lake has a lot of small fish in it. Like, we're all seeing small fish. We're all catching small fish. We're seeing it real time. Like, you know, maybe we need to put a slot limit on this lake and start taking out a bunch of these small fish. That's my hope, is that because we're getting so much better real-time data from a wide body of anglers, that should help us manage the fisheries better. Because I am for that. Like, do I think technology could hurt a small fishery? I, for sure. You know, if it makes us really adept at catching fish on a small body of water, that's probably going to be a problem. On a place like Kentucky Lake, there's going to be more fish die of old age than we'll ever catch out here. And I don't care how good the technology gets, we're not going to hurt them because that fishery is so large, right?
Yeah.
So, and people will say, like, yeah, well, Kentucky Lake went through a decline and all that. Well, yeah, that was related to water levels and spawns and killing year class. That had nothing to do with fishing pressure, you know? So on a big fishery can sustain it, so it's not as much of a problem. You know, like, I know up north and lots of lakes in Minnesota, yeah, like, ice fishing season, it's been a problem. I know guys, you know, cut a hole in the ice and clear a pond out, clear a lake out. You know,
well, like, you've got, you know, these beautiful ice castles and other, you know, fish houses that you can sleep in. And now the dads are bringing the wives and the kids out, and all of a sudden you're taking some more limits out of the lake. And sometimes guys are, you know, we talked a lot about barotrauma last winter. You probably heard about some of that, but you know, guys are out there catching crappies in 50 feet of water. And if they're catching and releasing those fish, a lot of them are dying. So there's definitely an issue there. And, you know, this body of water is going to be different than Mille Lacs or Lake of the Woods or whatever. You still have to manage your bodies of water accordingly. But at the end of the day, when I heard about the limits that were on those lakes in Mississippi, it's like, my gosh, like that's, to me, regardless of how many guides there are, how much pressure there is, live scope, whatever, those limits probably needed to come down anyway.
Yes. Yeah. That's to me, that's not a live scope issue that caused that. That's just a function of, that's not a very big fishery, and that probably has more pressure than any crappie lake in the country. So, yeah. So the combination of those two things, that's not sustainable long term. Now you curb it back. Now guys aren't going to make that 5-hour, because it's about 4.5 hours for us to drive down there from here. Guys aren't going to make that trip because they're like, well, I can come out here and keep 20 a day. Why am I going to drive to Mississippi and keep 30? You know, like, I'll just stay home and do that. So I think that will have an impact on as many guys fishing down there. Now guys are still going to go down there because it's still going to be the best place to catch a 3-pounder. So, you know, whether you ban live scope or not, that part's not going to change down there.
It's so crazy to think that we're only 4 or 5 hours away from Mississippi right now. Right. So, I mean, do you think you'd, maybe, and obviously the growing season is a lot longer, so to get a 3-pound crappie there, it's going to be a lot quicker than, you know, trying to grow one in Minnesota. But do you think, you know, some sort of trophy management on a lake like that, or just maybe a reduction in?
Yeah, I think that it's tough. So, and Adam can speak to this. So Adam Martin is our regional fisheries biologist, and I'll put him up against anyone in the country. He's one of the best I've ever been around, and I've been around a lot. He'll tell you, like, our lakes are managed for consumption. That's what they're managed for. It's hard to try to make Kentucky Lake a trophy fishery, right? And then there's a lot of guys in the state chirping that want to do that. Like, let's put Florida strains and everything so we can have 10-pounders. It's been proven it's not going to work here.
Like, why is that, you think? Just
we're above. So, yeah, it's because we're so far north.
Yeah.
Florida strains struggle to survive here in cold weather. This lake freezes out to the river. So it did it 2 years ago. So a Florida strain's not going to make it here. He's going to swim to Tennessee. So you're going to put all the money to stock Florida strains in Kentucky, and they're going to swim to Tennessee. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Did you really help the fishery on this end? Probably not. It's been proven above a certain parallel, which the entire state of Kentucky is above that parallel. Tennessee stocked like 20 lakes. The only lake it worked in is Chickamauga, and it's the furthest south fishery in Tennessee. So every fishery above that, it didn't work in. So then we should suspect it's not going to work in any of the Kentucky lakes.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's been people, and people will tell you, like, this small lake, my buddy has a small lake, he stocks F1s, it's got giants in it. Yeah, it's a little bitty fishery, and he's putting bait in it, and, like, he can sustain that. We can't sustain that population here. You're going to have to spend millions of dollars to stock enough fish for it to get a foothold, and then you have to have the forage base to support it. So
let's talk about the future just a little bit here before we wrap up. We were talking earlier at the conference here about numbers of anglers out there and what happened during COVID when everything spiked. And then you mentioned that we're actually lower than the pre-COVID numbers.
Currently. Yeah. I don't think we've got the final results yet, but that's what they're saying is, like, we gained something like 7 million anglers during COVID that kind of came into recreational fishing that weren't there before. Those have all since gone away. Plus we're down like another 2 million. So I think we like went up 7 million, but went down like 9 million. So we're actually getting below pre-COVID numbers. So we did see a big, huge spike in participation, and now it's going down. My guess is that has more to do with the economy than anything. Yeah. People just aren't spending the money to go fishing, spending it on groceries and necessities. So,
and I agree with that. And I think, you know, you have the guy that may only take one trip a year. He buys, you know, maybe it's a 3-day license, or maybe he buys the whole year, whatever it is. But he has one weekend that he goes and fishes with his buddies. Well, the economy's down a little bit. Hey guys, the trip, we're not having the trip this year.
Yeah.
You lose a lot of numbers that way. Some people will tell you that's a trend that's been happening for a while, and maybe that the participation is declining. I don't
see it as much on the fishing side as maybe the hunting side of things. Mm-hmm. But do you think we're actually on the decline with participation in angling? And what do you think the future looks like? What do we need to do to make sure that we have, because we need those guys that only buy the license one time a year. You know, that's a tough conversation to have. Sure. With a lot of people, like hardcore hunters or anglers that are out there all the time. They're the ones, and then you get these guys that are the weekend warriors or whatever. And when it comes to, you know, the ballot box of some of these decisions, a lot of times they both carry the same amount of weight because they're both license holders.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the hardcore guys are like, man, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right.
But when you talk about the politics and the strength in numbers, you need to have some of those guys that only fish one or two times a year. Mm-hmm. So how important is it to not only, you know, try to recruit people, but keep some of those, some retention? And is it attracting new anglers, or is it protecting our resources so that when those people do only go one time a year or go for their first time, they have a positive experience out there?
Yeah. I think it's like everything with managing fisheries. It's a complex issue. Like, yeah. I 100% agree we need to be recruiting more people. I do think we're declining. I think there's more competition for young people. So there's more drawing their attention, and there's not as many kids getting outdoors and doing outdoor things. So yeah, I definitely support initiatives that are pushing that. Because if you can get a kid interested, then he'll generally, you know, when we were making content at Wired to Fish, we would make them for personas. And so like one of the personas we had was the dad who just wants to take his kids fishing and them have a good time, right? Like, so that's part of it. If you can get kids in it, they're going to get their parents to buy things for them. Now their parents are going to be involved in it. You know what I mean? I think that's an easy, logical way to try to keep participation levels high. Yeah, I mean, the lakes are managed for, like I say, for consumption, yeah. You know? So they're trying to do a good job to provide catchable fish that people can take home and eat. And so I think that's a good thing to shoot for. It's, you know, again, shooting for the trophy thing, yes, that caters to the diehard guy, but the diehard guy honestly is not as big a population of license holders, right? Like it is those guys you talked about who maybe only take 3 to 6, you know, fishing trips a year that is the bulk of who buys licenses. So,
well, I appreciate you coming on the show and coming to the conference and being a part of it. I know we're going to do some stuff on a panel and talk about the fishery a little bit more here at the conference. So, Jason, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you.
Sporting Journal Radio is a division of Macaba LLC. If you missed any part of the show and want to listen to it again, or maybe hear an extended version of some of these interviews, you can download the podcast. Go to sportingjournalradio.com. Or you can watch this show on YouTube or Facebook. Search for Sporting Journal Radio.
Leaning into local radio. 98.3 FM WCQM, Park Falls, a Civic Media station. This is 98Q Country.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Vice President Kamala Harris travels to North Carolina today. She'll view the damage wrought by Hurricane Helene. Storm blamed for at least 220 deaths. And ABC's Morgan Norwood in Salisbury, North Carolina, says the recovery efforts have been hampered by everything from damage to washed out roads.
The military is a huge part of that. We know active duty troops, along with thousands of guardsmen from all over the southeast, are in the disaster zone. And this morning, with that death toll climbing, you know, dozens still unaccounted for, the loss of power, no water. I mean, the situation over in Western North Carolina is still so dire.
Former President Trump criticized the Biden administration's response to the storm. He'll be in Butler, Pennsylvania today, returning to the site of the July attempt on his life. 2 days from the one-year mark of the Israel-Hamas war, tensions in the Middle East hit one of their highest points since that day as Israel weighs a strike against Iran in retaliation for the missile attack. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden plans to return to Wisconsin Tuesday. More from Terry Bell.
The White House says the president will talk about the billions of dollars his administration has put into replacing lead pipes thanks to the bipartisan infrastructure law. Lead exposure is a long-standing problem in Milwaukee, which is replacing lead pipes to the tune of $800 million. Mayor Cavalier Johnson has said he wants to replace all of Milwaukee's lead pipes in 20 years. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Wisconsin wildlife officials are asking hunters to share deer tissue samples from the Oneida County town of Stella. The Department of Natural Resources plans to test these samples for PFAS. A local paper mill is linked to extremely high levels of PFAS in Stella. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
The Badgers look to bounce back. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. The Wisconsin football team is looking to find its winning ways once again as they battle Purdue today. Badgers head coach Luke Fickell said the quarterback spot will be key.
We can all pinpoint he'll